This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. The past year has been a bit of a struggle, ladies and gentlemen. We've all felt both direct and indirect impacts of that pandemic we were talking about just a little while ago. And the COVID fatigue, it's real. That's why our team of contributors are digging up ways to improve mental health and resilience to the pandemic's constant changes. So please stick with us, ladies and gentlemen, for a daily dose of Zen from Kelly & Company. Kelly McDonald here, host of the program with Ramya Muthan.
On Tuesdays, we like to check in with our veterinarian, Danielle Jeankind.
The human-animal bond plays such an important role in people's lives, and as a veterinarian, it's my privilege to help keep those bonds strong and healthy. I'm Dr. Danielle Jeankind, and welcome to Ask a Veterinarian.
Danielle, we are having a bit of a discussion, a back and forth, if you will, about whether Glizzy, my dog, should be in the studio during shows or not, because he's been pretty vocal lately. But we're saying we might be able to put that on a demand thing where, you know, he speaks on demand or on command, and then we can use that in the show. And then other times he can just be quiet. What are your thoughts? I think a little training can go a long way.
I think Danielle's going to say, you got a big job. Get to work.
I know.
Well, I can tell you, you actually can teach your dog to speak on command. I did that with a husky I had many years ago, and he would never bark. He would just go, rah, 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 like he had this sort of half howl, half bark thing going on. So whenever, and there were certain times when I would just know that he was going to do it, you know? And so right before he started to do it, I would say, Joey, sing. And then I'd reward him with a treat when he actually made any noise. And so it didn't take him long to figure out that if I said, Joey, sing, if he wanted a cookie, he should sing, right?
Nice.
So it was actually pretty easy to teach. The harder part was getting him to stop.
Exactly.
Because he, you know, once he got going, he was like, this is great. There was no off switch. A little bit harder.
And sometimes you got to get to them right away to ask them to sing, unless they start singing without you. Then you're like, oh no, they're doing it without the cookie.
That's right. And then, but there is actually a way to teach the no bark command too, you know, which is rewarding them for, you know, being quiet after you know, give them the command.
Yeah. Somehow I think that one's a little harder.
Yes. Yeah. It's a little harder to intuitively get them to stop. You have to wait for them to stop and then reward them. And then they get the idea.
See, we get little tips and tricks with you along the way. Danielle, in our current circumstance for today's subject, the coronavirus has turned the world as we know it upside down. And we're wondering if it's changed the collective behavior towards us and our pets. And are there things that we need to know to keep our pets safe if someone in our household comes down with COVID-19, for example? And we did discuss bits of this earlier on in the pandemic, but you're going to weigh in on some of these questions as you give us an update to pets and the pandemic. So to start things off, do we have any new scientific information on COVID-19 and if it can infect animals?
Well, that's definitely an area that's still being looked at. We know that the SARS-CoV-2 virus can infect cats, dogs, ferrets, and mink. We know that dogs don't usually get sick with it. If cats do get sick with it, the disease is usually mild. We know now that cats can shed the virus after infection for a short period of time, and that they can infect other cats with it. A few newer studies have shown some new and interesting information. Researchers have determined that some cats who were infected with the virus once and then recovered can become reinfected again. And I think they've seen that in a few people as well. They were also able to show that those cats had less illness the second time around, and that they weren't able to transmit the virus to other cats the second time around either, which I thought was pretty cool, actually. even more interesting research looked at what different species of animals were able to be infected with the virus. So apparently camels, horses, sheep, cows, and rabbits can theoretically become infected with the virus, but ducks, pigs, chickens, and guinea pigs cannot. And, you know, because, you know, we live with urban wildlife and wildlife around, you know, and in our cities, like coyotes and raccoons and, you know, birds and such. Some studies have even been done on wildlife. So some scientists went out and caught a few individuals of different species of wildlife and exposed them to COVID-19. And they found that some of them actually can be infected with the virus and shed it, even though they don't get sick. So they found the animals that could do that were skunks, deer mice, and bushy-tailed wood rats. I have no idea what a bushy-tailed wood rat is, but, you know, apparently they must be hanging around out there somewhere. Other wild animals weren't susceptible to the virus. So raccoons, house mice, and cottontail rabbits. And, you know, and I felt a little better about that just because, you know, I mean, typically raccoons and house mice are two of the more common things that people come in contact with as far as wild animals go.
Wow. And you think about that. Wow. It, because, you know, we all, oh, cats, dogs, and things like that. But as you mentioned, you know, a lot of us, unfortunately, will get a mouse in the house. And you don't need to know, have that. It's bad enough all the other things off the surface. So that's kind of interesting. We're also hearing in the news about the new variances of the coronavirus causing all kinds of problems. Do we know if they will affect pets any differently?
We don't know at this point. Theoretically, mutations in the virus could make it less infectious toward other species, or it could become more infectious towards other species. It really depends on, you know, the mutation that is, you know, expressing on the surface of the virus. But the more individuals a virus infects, whether those individuals be animals or humans, the more likely it is to mutate. So really, to protect ourselves and our pets from the threat of the virus mutating, the best thing we can do right now is to prevent ourselves from becoming infected. So nothing really has changed on that front. You know, to protect yourself and your pets, it's best to keep yourself and your pets away from infected people.
Do we know yet, Danielle, if COVID-19 can be transmitted from humans, or sorry, animals to people? Because this was another question.
Yeah, and it's sort of an interesting question because, you know, more specifically, people want to know, you know, what animals, you know, can I get right. it from my pets? Can I get it from my neighbor's dog on the street? Is it only wild animals I can get it from, you know? So the official word from organizations like the World Health Organization is that there is no evidence supporting the transmission of COVID-19 from companion animals to people. The CDC's website says that there have been documented cases of infection in pets, but that the risk of becoming infected by a pet is low. But there was one study published in the journal Science in January of this year that showed that mink farm workers in the Netherlands had contracted the virus from the mink they worked with. And so the mink originally caught it from the farm workers, passed it around to each other, and then other farm workers, you know, were able to pick it up from the mink. So in spite of the fact that, you know, pets can both carry and shed the virus, there's never been a documented case of someone catching COVID from a pet. And basically, all we can really conclude right now is that there is a theoretical risk, you know, which is probably low, and we need to do more research on it. And I mean, University of Guelph researchers are looking at, you know, these questions and stuff. So hopefully, you know, we'll have more answers in the coming months.
Well, I know a lot of our friends with service animals, that's the big thing, of course, they're concerned due to the relationship. I know a lot of people play with their animals and do things like that, but that constant relationship that someone with a service animal, guide dog, whatever it might be, these are some of the worries. So have the recommendations for handling pets in the home with infected people changed in regards to pets?
No, you know, and it's important to remember, just to remember to treat pets, you know, as if they're people with respect to coronavirus transmission. So, you know, if you're infected with coronavirus, you know, you wouldn't have unnecessary or close contact with people, with any people, like even people in your own household. So you should apply those same principles to your pet. So, you know, obviously, if you get sick with coronavirus, you know, you should have someone else in the house who should be looking after your pet. If you're quarantining in your bedroom, you know, you don't want your pet to come in and sleep with you, that sort of thing, you know. Don't let pets interact with people outside your household, and practice physical distancing from other people's pets. And, you know, that's harder than you think. I mean, you think you're going to go out for a walk with your dog and your dog's buddy lives down the street, but it's the same principle. You know, you don't go over to your buddy's house for coffee right now. So you don't let your dog socialize either. You know, if your pet, if you're in quarantine, your pet should be quarantined as well. And, you know, I think the big thing to realize, you know, is that there's no need to panic over potential animal exposure to COVID-19, because if your pet is infected with that virus, it probably caught it from you, you know, and the good news is that they're not likely to get very sick with it.
Danielle, are there any benefits, beneficial effects that you want to talk about for having pets during the pandemic?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this has been such a great thing, you know, to hear the lead in to the segment today about how, you know, your contributors are coming with these little rays of sunshine, because, you know, pets are definitely a ray of sunshine during the pandemic. And actually, the Human Animal Bond Research Institute has been looking at the beneficial effects of pets during the pandemic. So they went out and they did a bunch of surveys and they gave them out to pet owners. And when they got them back, they realized that there were some really amazing benefits to having a pet through the pandemic. So 72% of surveyed pet owners reported that their pet helps to reduce their stress and anxiety through the pandemic. Also, caring for pets helps people keep a schedule and routine and gives them a sense of purpose. You know, so if you're isolating or working from home, you know, and you have to get out of bed in the morning to feed your cat, you know, these are reasons to get out of bed in the morning and keep going with a routine. And I mean, really, try skipping your cat's morning meal during the lockdown and see why it's a good idea to get out of bed. I mean, my cat would be breaking down my door.
I was just going to say, the cat can hunt you down pretty easy. It's not like you're out like, I'm out of here, cat. You know, I'm going to work now.
Exactly. And, you know, and they say like 73% of pet owners, you know, are exercising more than usual and they're out walking their dogs more. And, you know, 70% of dog owners reported their dogs reduced their feelings of loneliness and isolation. And, you know, I think that's a really fantastic thing. And some of these benefits even work in reverse, in that our pets seem to be getting some benefits out of the pandemic, in that 84% of pet owners reported that they're now more aware of their pet's health because of the pandemic.
That's nice. That's great. So with that being said, do you think people visit the veterinarian more because of this?
I think that's the case here, like in Ontario, maybe the rest of Canada. I'm not as certain about the other provinces, but from my own experience, my own personal experience, I can tell you that we are really busy at work. And, you know, we are seeing a lot of new puppies and kittens compared to what we've seen at this time of year in the past years before the pandemic. And, you know, even the Canadian Veterinary Medical Association website reported that vet services are booming, you know, and especially in the U.S. and Australia in particular. I couldn't really find any specific information about Canada, but I feel that, you know, that's probably the case here as well.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, this is amazing. Next week, we're going to talk about something that we remind ourselves of and our friends and family. But is it important to pay attention to how much water our pets are drinking? Really interesting and probably very important subject. We'll talk to you then.
Okay, you guys have a good week.
You too. Danielle Jeankind is our veterinarian, and she joins us every Tuesday for Ask a Vet.
Francis Wong on deck next to talk float tanks, ladies and gentlemen. Let's immerse ourselves in that topic in a moment. You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.